Hey, this is Hal Sparks. You know me from I Love the 80s, VH1,
Talk Soup, Lab Rats, Queers Folk,
and that's Richard Hunter.
We're both musicians, we're both comedians, and we both have the same favorite member of KISS.
Welcome to the Double Neck Podcast.
Is that what we're calling it?
We're talking about some of the greatest music ever made with a lot of the people who made it.
I love the 80s, I love the 90s, I love the 70s.
We're two hosts with 10 strings between us.
You're listening to the Double Neck Podcast.
Hal, let's welcome to the show right now, comedian extraordinaire Don Jameson. Don, how you doing, man? It's good to talk to you.
Yeah. Hey, Don.
Hey, what's up, guys? Good to see you wearing the Motorhead shirt there.
Of course, am.
Hero Lemmy, we lost him a little over 3 years ago.
That's right.
God, I love that man.
Yeah, I am wearing my Motorhead shirt. This is actually the version of the Motorhead shirt that you get at the Rainbow where it's got Lemmy's Lounge on the back.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I went to see John 5 at the Whiskey week before last, and right before that we went over to Rainbow and did the – I tell you what, the vegan is a little challenged at the Rainbow, they do ask twice if you for sure mean to order a pizza with no cheese on it.
Right.
But they get it together. That's all right.
You got a lot of aging rock stars who have been put on special diets by their doctors, you know what I mean? Like low sodium, you know, like Blackie Lawless from Wasp coming in there and he's like, it's got to be gluten-free. Yeah. You know, like, all right. Like what a weird time we live in, you know? I just did Ace of Spades for the Jam in LA not too long ago.
Oh, Ultimate Jam Night.
I'm like one of three people who will come out there and actually do it like the song itself, you know?
Because
they had a girl sing it one time before and she was great, but she sang it like a singer.
Oh, right.
And I just kind of
Lemmy didn't sing
no,
like a singer.
You just go out there and tilt the mic down your throat like it's a bottle of whiskey and you're trying to, you know, drown yourself.
That's right. That's
and
right.
just, you know, if you like to gamble, you got to sell it.
That's right.
You know?
You do have to sell it.
Yeah, you can't hold it. So.
Don, of course, one of the hosts of the beloved That Metal Show.
That's right.
That any hard rock fan worth anything was a devotee of.
And is automatically jealous of you on on one or two fronts always. You know what I mean? And I have weird ones. You know, like it was, you know, like when John Sykes was on. Like, he played along on one episode or something like that.
Yeah, he always had the guitar player that would play. Yeah.
Yeah, he played with, you know, I was like, fucking John Sykes, you know, from Blue Murder and the original, the big Whitesnake record. And I was like, God damn it, why do I live on the West Coast right now?
That must have been Don, I mean, that must have just been like, in terms of producing a TV show or having a hand in putting one together or anything like that, that must have been just as easy as putting together your ultimate wish list, right, and checking them off one by one.
Well, first of all, I just want to address something Hal said. I don't want to live in a world where Blackie Lawless is gluten-free. I just say.
Neither does Blackie, I think. I'm of course kidding. I think he lives on broken glass and turtle shells. That's mostly what he eats. And while watching YouTube videos about, you know, the Fed and 9/11.
Sure.
Like,
Right, and his he cleans life. His toenails with buzz songs.
That's right,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and I could see you at the Rainbow, like, you know, I want cheeseless pizza. And, like, weren't you just, like, smoking a joint, taking a picture with the Lemmy statue?
That's right, yeah. How dare you, sir? Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, our gluten-free menu is not available to anyone who's wearing a Motorhead shirt. It's in honor of the dead.
Yeah. But yeah, as far as the show, yeah, guys, thanks. You know, just to be, you know, just to sit and talk with these guys was just a mind-blowing experience.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned John Sykes. I mean, I've been to John Sykes' house.
You bastard.
And that's just ridiculous. I mean, you know, walking around John Sykes in his living room and him showing me pictures of him and Phil Lynott together.
Yeah.
And even after all these years, like, you know, John will be telling a funny story and then he'd get to a picture and he'd go, oh, this is the last picture I took with Phil. And he'd start welling up. And it really blows your mind out. I'm lucky I've never been starstruck, even as a kid.
Yeah.
I never felt that way. So, you know, when we started doing the show, I just always sort of felt like, hey, you know, I've been preparing to talk to these guys since I was 11.
Yep.
So
it
just seemed like a natural thing.
Yeah. Yep. I've never had one of those like kind of. I think maybe when Paul Stanley said, hi, Hal, and I wasn't even looking his way yet. When he said, like, we both had our kind of Paul Stanley moment in that regard. But everybody else, like the first time I met Sebastian Bach, like, he is such a powder keg of a human being and such a, like, a weird mix of, like, a stoner and a rocker and a insurance salesman. There's just this dude, this is so fucking boring, you know, like, he just has this energy to him that, like, I feel good with this dude, like, just being around this giant baby Huey of a human being, you know. Is there anybody, and this is, you know, we want to actually talk with you about other stuff besides the show, because I'm sure you've covered this in some ways, but is there anybody, like, missed opportunity or you know, where you wanted to talk to, or you weren't there when they showed up, or some kind of throughput where you're like, that person, that's the one.
The one that got away.
Or somebody you were like, this is the closest to starstruck. What was the closest to starstruck, maybe?
I think, you know, the obvious people that we missed on that metal show were Ozzy and Gene and Paul.
Right.
And, you know, most of the show was fueled by Eddie Trunk's relationships with these artists.
Right.
Or lack thereof.
Or good or bad, yeah.
Right.
Well, right. And for these particular, you know, examples, that was something that kept us from interviewing them. But I've met Ozzy before.
Yeah.
You know, I met Gene. Paul, the three of us went to, when they did the Zeppelin, the O2 concert movie in New York.
Mm-hmm.
We were on the red carpet behind Paul, and he was going into the premiere too. And he saw Jim and I, and we were, like, trying to get up close to him to, like, try to take a picture with him.
Uh-huh.
And then he just, like his publicist was like, oh, CBS wants to talk to you. He's like, no. I'm going in.
Right.
And we were just sort of guilty by association. So I never got to meet Paul. But
we
took some shots at him on the show, you know, just all in good fun. And he took some shots at us.
Right.
And it's all cool. He called this Wayne's World, and you know, that was a funny comment.
Yeah.
In fact, I wish we would have been Wayne's World. I'd be a lot richer right now.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, that, I guess that, you know, that's meant as a slight, except the fact that, you know, when Wayne's World had Aerosmith in their basement, and Tom Hanks is the roadie.
I was like,
man, that's a pretty cool basement.
Yeah,
I wouldn't mind
true.
This.
Although
it
was fiction, and the idea was that in the reality of Wayne's World, it did exist. Was like Carl, what was his dude and his sleazy friends, whatever that guy was, who had a show in L.A. It was all porn stars and rock stars. Colin and his sleazy friends.
Yeah, the old Public Access.
Yeah. And that used to be the baseline for, you know, it what rock guys got as an interview show. Because it's interesting, because that metal show actually elevated. It was, you know, it was that and Headbangers Ball where you could actually hear these guys talk about something. And more so than Headbangers Ball, obviously, because you're not pitching to videos and it's a sales moment. It's,
you know what, Hal? That's a good point. And Don, I'll ask you about this because, and I didn't really consider this until right now, but, you know, growing up, as we're all more or less the same age, you know, I mean, growing up and being into metal and the music we're into and everything, our only access to interviews of these mythical creatures was, you know, Circus Magazine and Hit Parader
Kerrang.
And stuff that, you know, a lot of times would be molded before it was released. They weren't on the Tonight Show.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that is kind of one thing I guess you guys did with that metal show was, in a way, it was kind of like the Tonight Show of metal. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like giving a voice to the musicians, but in a spoken form.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, we had a good time. We broke balls, obviously, depending on how well we knew, you know, one of the guests.
Right.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, we treated George Lynch like he was Jared Leto. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what we were about. It was like, you know, we could have fun.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Are you telling me you blew George Lynch? This totally changed my picture, the entire thing. That was
our secret.
So, I'm sorry. We'll edit that out. Letting them talk long form without, you know, because even on, like, when they were on The Tonight Show, if you did have a hard rock band or a metal band on The Tonight Show or Letterman occasionally, they never got interviewed.
Yeah, they're just playing a tune.
They would come over and wave at them and go, you know, Faith No More, and just walk off. You know, like, that was it, you know. Specifically avoiding it, you know, making sure they didn't get a word in edgewise, because they're like, oh, we're gonna blow the program with this. So let's actually start talking about something that, like, as you know, fans and performers ourselves, because there's kind of a like a window in this that we wanted to discuss this particular podcast with you. And it's really about phones at shows. Everybody watching, like some bands shut phones off now at the show. Like, you know, like you can, some events you have to put your phone in a bag, you get it back afterwards. Yeah. Other places they lock it out. What's your experience like as a concert goer? I'm sure it's similar to ours, but like, you know, going to shows over the years and watching as cell phones started to show up and become a part of the show. And then it, you know, maybe even fade a little bit lately.
And also your perspective from being on the stage, too, because you're going to be one of the few people that's regularly seeing it from both sides of the equation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you guys as well, because you do stand up. But yeah, as far as the concert goer, look, I'm old school, man. I'm 52. So, I might take a picture or two. Other than that, I try not to be that guy. Mm-hmm. The one thing that, you know, you have to be responsible for now is the people who follow you on social media. So the thing I started getting after a while is like, oh man, I follow you on Facebook, I follow you on Twitter, I follow you on Instagram. You go to all these shows and you post one lousy picture, you could at least put a song up or something.
Right.
So now I kind of take it on like, all right, let me post one song. And even that, I'm like sweating through the whole thing. Like, I feel horrible.
Right.
But at the same time, like, I'll be filming and I'll look behind me and the person behind me is just watching the show through my phone.
Yeah. You know, I think some bands interact really well with screens and some don't. Like, obviously, Kiss is great with it and they're good with their cameras and stuff. I think Steven Tyler is probably the best front man who interacts with the cameras that are touring with them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he will stick his giant mouth right up on the camera and scream right into it. Mm-hmm. And like, when you're looking at it on the, you know, on the sides of an, you know, of a stadium size, you know, wall, you know, Megatron or whatever, that, like, they have, like, it's surreal and bigger than life and beautiful, and it's really fascinating to watch, whatever. But like, some bands just fucking hate it, you know, and you can tell they stiffen up when they're being filmed, you know, from phones or whatever. But for me, I'll do a little bit of it. I make sure I take some pictures, but I put it away. I'm, you know, and I like to walk around, see the show in different places.
Yeah.
Mosh a little, for God's sake.
Well, you know, Don.
You're not, you're not still moshing.
I'll do it sometime. It depends on the pit. It depends on the pit. If it's nutty teenagers and I might have to punch one, it's just a bad business thing because I have a lot of, you know, Lab Rats fans. I might end up with one of them in a headlock.
Yeah. Hal's got a Disney show. He's got to be careful.
Yeah. But, it's not outside the realm of possibility. No.
I'm more embarrassed to get knocked down by one. That's my problem.
Yeah, and come up with a broken hip.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, from a 14-year-old girl.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Real impressive.
You
is that the guy from that metal show?
Yeah. Not anymore.
My daughter just broke his hip.
Yeah. Well, they've got video of them EMTs fumbling through your wallet for your Medicare card.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Don, I'll throw a thought in on this that I feel like doesn't get brought up a lot. I mean, everybody talks about, you know, it kind of sucks to just be seeing a bunch of people watching through their screens. And I get all that. But there is one other side to this I don't think gets brought up a lot, and it's this. You know, nowadays, people's social media is the de facto promoter for the bands.
Right.
Because if you think about, like, and I see this on Instagram. So, like, what I'll do is, and I agree with you guys. I kind of fall into this camp. I like, you know, take a few pictures, maybe 60 seconds of video or something, eye level, don't hold it up in front of somebody else's head or something like that. Do a little postcard, just enough to say, hey, here's who I was. But, you know, or here's where I was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but the thing is, if you hashtag it, you know, metal music or whatever, then you know what's going to happen on Instagram? When Judas Priest comes to town, the algorithm is going to dictate that they're going to show you a little promo for the fact that tickets are available now and Judas Priest is coming to town. And not all bands need that, but some bands definitely could use that in 2019 because the radio sure isn't playing
doesn't
them
exist,
like they did
right.
in 86. So, you know what I'm saying, Don? Like, I think that there may be some bands and fans who kind of don't see that side of it, that hey, if we get too clever with this thing, we can actually outsmart ourselves out of some promotion that we need.
Right. Well, so there's, and I could take even to another level.
Yeah.
Now look at the level, you know, when I play and I open for bands doing comedy, especially if it's one of the bigger bands,
yeah.
When you're in a big venue and people have their phones up, it's not quite as distracting.
Right.
When you're in a comedy club, like there's a club here in New Jersey where I recorded one of my albums at called Uncle Vinny's Comedy Club. And mm-hmm. It's just a tiny little club. It's my home club. I love it there. But, you know, you're right on top of the audience. And I actually had someone sit in the front row, the first seat, directly in front of the mic with an iPad. And when I got up there, started filming me, I'm like, you can't be serious.
Right.
I'm right here.
Yeah, right.
I can reach out and just take that out of your hands.
Yeah.
Like, that's, and I mean, it's amazing that people have lost the sort of...
Well, I also think you know
that thing inside of them that says this is inappropriate.
You're right. Yeah. Just be a. You're here to watch. You're not the producer of your own little mini television show. It's interesting though. There is a difference though, but as a stand up versus bands, because a band is doing the songs every night. They're doing the same songs in general. They've got a set list. They may want to keep parts of the set list secret if they're a big band, whatever. But usually it gets out after a while, or they have to shuffle it around to do that, and that's fine. And the only thing people you worry about is if you egg the song at some point and it gets out. Like you hit a bad note or your guitar player drifts, shall we say, off the reservation. But as a stand-up, half the time they're just like cataloging your material before you get a chance to either finish crafting it or when you're even going to put it out. You know, that's I think, you know, in clubs – stand-up clubs, anyways, are way better most of the time at shutting that shit down. You know,
that's a different concern.
Yeah, but when it comes to bands, the only problem is like when it's bad enough when you have a tall person with a fucking ponytail standing in front of you when you're my height, you know, at a show. Much less, you know, a wall of phones that are just like bad camera choices, you know, at all times, you know, just zipping back and forth. Like I can't watch through a wall of half screens.
Yeah.
Have you seen any video of your stuff online where somebody's posted your stand-up or anything?
Nope.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so ridiculous, because I know 99% of this filming goes nowhere.
Right.
So I just want to walk up and just choke people and go, you're never going to watch this.
That's right.
Why are you doing this? Yes. Like how, you know, from being a stand-up, a lot of comics tape their sets.
Yeah.
99% of them don't watch it or listen to it.
Right.
I mean, I've been talking into comics recorders for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I've never once seen that comic another time and have them go, dude, you're an asshole. Yeah. You talked over my set.
Right. That's hilarious.
You know, it's 99% of the stuff's never being used. Most of these people wake up the next day and go, wow, I recorded 25 minutes of his set? What was I thinking?
I just want to – I record all my sets in case I'm assaulted. I don't want to miss a moment to go viral.
That's
you know,
right.
If someone climbs on stage.
Yeah, you just have video going at all times.
Yeah,
you have security cameras here while we're shooting this just to make sure.
If I'm going
to
have a big break, that's what it's going to be. I tell you what, Don, it's funny. I actually got material. I actually got stand-up material out of this topic because I talk about this on stage because I went to a Misfits show, and they were locking up phones. You know, they're putting them in those little pouches and everything. And so there's this
at the Misfits. There's something fucked up about that.
So there's this this giant woman in front of me that I no sooner do I get to my seat than she stands up and we're like on the first balcony and she's screaming down into the floor, Vanessa, look up here, it's Trina, Vanessa, count 15 rows up, look, red tube top, I'm waving at you, Vanessa. And I was thinking to myself, gee, if Trina only had some small electronic device that she could use to privately, silently communicate to her friend, I would not be annoyed. I'm going to
take this up with the Misfits.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my problem with the Misfits show is too many rules.
Well, right? Don, talk to us about being the comedian that opens rock shows, because this is how I ran into you a couple of weeks ago. You were opening for Anvil here in Vegas, and I know that's this is a thing that you regularly do. I think you're going to be out with Pop Evil, too, later on this year. And, you know, talk a little bit about, I mean, especially that's of real interest to the two of us, having dual musical and comedic backgrounds, but that's an interesting needle to thread, because that's not like performing to a regular comedy club audience mm-hmm. that knows they're coming to a comedy club. These are people who were anticipating headbanging, and you're going to make them laugh for a little bit before Anvil comes on. How does that work?
Yeah. I just want to throw this out here too, man. I mean, I think the three of us should talk about going out and doing something together, but that's something
it.
We could talk about
totally.
Off the air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right down. All right.
I think, you know, it was funny when we started doing that metal show, some bands started, you know, putting feelers out there. Hey, would you like to come and open for us at this gig or whatever?
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
and I always, you know, the comedians that I really loved were comics who did that, who mixed those worlds, you know, Dice opening for Guns N' Roses in front of 100,000 people at the Rose Bowl, or,
right.
you know, Kinnison, you know, mixing in with Slash and all those guys to do the Wild Thing. Even Bobcat Goldthwait went out and did the first Nirvana tour.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it was so not cool after that
mm-hmm.
for like 20 years.
I blame Bobcat.
I'm the reason he blew his brains out. It's not your fault. It's my fault.
But then I always thought that was the coolest thing, because
yep.
my first two records were Kiss Destroyer and George Carlin Occupation Fool.
There you go.
I thought those two worlds existed great together, you
mm-hmm.
know? Like when we, you know, I mentioned Lemmy at the beginning of the show. He's one of my comic heroes. You know, a lot of my comic influences are really metal guys. You know, Ozzy with the one-liners, you know,
mm-hmm.
he's like the Mitch Hedberg of heavy metal, you know.
Yeah, it's a good
analogy. Peter Steele from Typo Negative,
yeah,
always,
right.
you know, always self-deprecating.
Mm-hmm.
Alice Cooper, always with a funny story. So, you know, David Lee Roth, you didn't even know what the heck he was talking about,
totally,
but
yeah.
you're laughing your balls
the
off.
Dudes from Opeth.
So those were as big influences as anybody else.
Right.
So I always thought those two worlds should and did mix well. And, you know, we did the Metallica Orion Fest, myself and Jim Brewer and Jim Florentine. And
mm-hmm.
and then it kind of went from there. I started getting regular offers to go out on the road with bands. And after doing it for a while, I just kind of developed an act just for that.
Right.
As, you know, outside of my nightclub act.
Well, you mm-hmm. know, what makes me envious of that is that I think as music fans, it while we listen to the music, and if you have a mind to just sort of think comedically anyway, like a writer, you're going to have funny observations that are going to relate to that music.
Yep.
And the problem is, when I'm doing the random comedy club middle or whatever, that's not going to play to
there's
most
no,
of the audience,
yeah, there's
right?
no output for
so,
it.
So, like, right. like Don, I know you've got a great album. Joke on your latest record, Communication Breakdown, that I love about Zakk Wylde. But what's so interesting about that joke, Don, is that you obviously have to know you're in front of a crowd full of rockers, because the joke depends on, number one, okay, let's walk through it. Okay, you have to understand, you have to know who Ozzy is. Most people will.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to understand that when Don says Zakk Wylde, he's talking about the guitar player in Ozzy's band. But now you also have to understand that Zakk looks like a Viking.
Yes.
But you also have to go all the way back to understand that Zakk Wylde once looked like a pretty boy
mm-hmm.
to get the joke. So, Don, I mean, that's a lot of confidence in the audience
yeah.
that those are long-time rock
that
fans.
They've hung in there since No Rest for the Wicked.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, I think there's a balance, you know. When I do the regular nightclub gigs,
mm-hmm.
I'll feel the audience out. If they feel like a little bit more of a rock crowd, I can do more of it.
Mm-hmm.
Some nights I'll only do a few minutes of it because I can tell they're not into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I have obviously other material. But you know, Brian Posehn did our show early on. And it was funny. He's like, you know, it was weird, man. He goes, you know, we're comics. We write about the things that are most important in our lives. And for years, I never wrote about loving this kind of music. And then it hit me like, why wouldn't I do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess part of it is what you're saying. You're like, you think the audience isn't going to get it, or maybe only a portion is. But you'd be surprised, man. I mean, the crowds are pretty hit, man. I mean,
yeah,
you talk about Kiss, Twisted Sister,
yeah.
or anybody, man, people know who you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, I did I had a bit about Zakk because I was at the show at the House of Blues where he melted down basically on the day before he went into rehab. It was just a, and I basically tell the whole story about how I'm like so excited to be there, and then the whole thing goes to shit, and it's the greatest show I've ever seen. But I tell the entire thing, like, he threw his guitar at the sound guy and broke two of his ribs. Like, it was like fucked up. And over the course, like, that started as a 2-minute aside I did for somebody who was in the audience who had an Ozzy shirt on. And then just like, I'm just going to tell you this story real quick. It became a half hour piece, and I ended up doing Download Festival doing that piece, just, you know, opening for those shows there because it was so specific in these like metal tents at Download Festival, you know. And there is, you know, and you're right. There is a crossover. It's amazing how funny some of the hardest metal dudes are too, because I think it's just at a certain point you either snap and become a psychopath, or part of you just goes, I'm tired of being miserable. I'm going to be ridiculous for a couple of minutes. And like Lane Staley from Alice in Chains was known for just like running around the studio with his underwear on his head and that kind of stuff. Like, you can only sing so many heroin jingles before you want to cheer up for a, you know, a couple of days. And, so I get, you know, and do you think with your show, though, there's a certain element of, since that's in your main credit, a certain portion of your audience now, even at the regular club, knows a piece of what's going on. So you can, you know, you'll get more opportunities to do that stuff. Or do you ever find yourself, and this is a comic inside baseball comedy question, making sure you have a non-rock set for your own use? Like, okay, I need this pack of material in case I, you know, so I don't get...
case of emergency.
Yeah, right. In case I get a, you know, a set or something that they want me, because they know I'm good, but it's not the right audience, so I have a whole nut of stuff that I can go to.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. I think, you know, it took a while, but, you know, after that metal show had been on for probably like 5 or 6 seasons, you start to see the change in the clubs where you see the obvious Friday and Saturday night couples who, you know, the guy worked all week, or they both worked all week, and this was their one night off, and they got dressed up, and the guy's got his blue button-up shirt on, his khakis, and his phone holster, and then at the table next to him is 5 guys in camo shorts and Slayer shirts with long hair.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Like, yeah. This is like the same thing that happened to Joe Rogan when he started commentating UFC.
Right.
He started seeing fight fans.
Like the bulldogs that started showing up at his fucking shows. And I you know that khaki couple that's sitting next to the Slayer dudes is like, we got free tickets because we came to see the other show. And they we won free tickets. We thought, this guy's on TV. Yeah. Well, like, yeah, that was their criterion for the, you know, coming in there. So,
right, but they saw Dave Coulier the week before.
That's right.
Joe Rogan is not Dave Coulier.
No.
I'll tell you where I had the opposite experience of the crowd being in tune with my my material. So 10 years ago, probably about, I mean, when I was first starting, Jim Florentine let me do a guest spot at his gig because I knew him through radio, right? Because I did Dallas radio. And this is probably the 5th time I've been up, okay? Yeah. And it was cool of him to let me get up. And I used to do this bit. Hal goes all the way back to the beginning. When you remember that bit I used to do about Apple computers and if kids were more designed like apples instead of PCs, I might be willing to have one?
Yes.
All right.
So, user interface.
Yeah. Right. So this bit very early on in my fledgling comedic career, Don, you know, I was pretty proud of it. It usually did pretty well. Mm-hmm. But I did it in front of with the guest spot on Jim's show. And it wasn't awful, but it wasn't working, right? And it was probably too long and some other stuff. So anyway, you know, I'm like 4 sets into my comedic career, and he was real nice to me, Don. He after in the dressing room, he's like, man, you know, that bit was a bit's good. You know, he said, bit's good. He goes, problem is, not very many people in my crowd are gonna have Apple computers.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. I was like, that's the first hard lesson of comedy
that's
I learned.
Yeah, you actually had like you had a New York moment. You outsmarted the room on accident.
I guess. Yeah.
I I've opened for bands. I haven't done it as much as you have done, and but I like when I started when I was 15 in Chicago, I would do any gig that I could drive to. Essentially, because I couldn't, you know, like there was no touring for at that point because I was still in high school. So I used to open for a Blue Oyster Cult cover band at the Brat Stop in Wisconsin. Because it was, you know, it was an hour and 10 minute drive, and I
stop bragging.
No, yeah, and it had chicken wire stage, the whole deal, like awesome. Yeah. And then I didn't really do any bands after that. It took off. I started doing regular stand up, and I didn't have to do that again. And then I got asked to open for a band after I'd gotten Talk Soup for Y2K. Like the night of New Year's Eve gig, opening for a band on stage at Panther Pavilion in front of 15,000 people. And I'm like, I've opened for a band before. I'll figure out something. Like the band, the Bee Gees, the night Y2K, when every baby boomer in this fucking place thought they were going to die.
This was it.
And when they died, they wanted to die seeing the Bee Gees.
This was going to be the last laugh they were going to have.
So I had So I had a bit about Alcoholics Anonymous, because I don't drink. I've never had an alcoholic drink. I don't do any drugs. I'm not in any program. I always get asked if I'm in a program.
Right.
The root of the bit is, it's not that I have anything against the organization. I just think they should change the name, because none of these fuckers are anonymous. They will tell you at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
And, you know, and
like us vegans.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I've got a meeting. Like, you're fucking a corporate takeover. You don't have a meeting. You got a bunch of other drunks to sit around bitching. And so I have this bit or whatever. 3,000 people to my right start booing, horribly. And I would find out later that Maurice Gibb was in the program for decades, was one of the first people to crack it into public life and make a big, you know, like, I'm in a program, I'm going to be out about this, and if you're an alcoholic, you need Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, he was like the branding dude. So all 3,000 of these people were sponsors from all over the country who he'd flown in special for, like, a Tony Robbins level meeting the next day, right, if we live. And so they start booing, like, horribly at this bit or whatever. The other side of the audience doesn't know what the fuck they're booing about, because it's just a joke about the name. It's a pun, essentially.
Right.
It's not.
Yeah.
I'm not destroying them. And they start yelling and clapping, and then they start booing harder. And then, like, it's like 7,000 people on either side of the stadium are basically in a war against each other. And I just had to stop talking for a second and just let this play out. And there was, at one point, it settled down, and there was this ungodly silence in the place. And I went, I started a joke that started the whole world crying, and ba-boom! Like, it was this huge laugh that just... They were like, oh, he did this on purpose. Fucking didn't. I had that stuck in my head because I...
What unites all of these people?
Yeah, it was
love
the Bee Gees.
Of the Bee Gees.
I was like, get me the fuck out of here. And
don't you wish you had alcohol to blame that bad decision?
But no, I'm so glad I didn't, because here's the thing. I would have had to sit with Maurice for 2 hours after the show while he talked to me about it. You know, going, you need to start getting this together. Do you find in big venues, because this was the thing that stood out to me about that gig, was that it wasn't really like laughter. It was like waves of stuff, and you almost had to watch the sound of your voice carry the timing to the back of the hall and forward again, because people heard it at a different time. The place is so fucking big that, like, the punchline reaches the people in the back a millisecond after the people in the front. It's just odd. And it felt like what it felt like to me was like standing on the deck of an aircraft carrier telling jokes facing the ocean.
Right. Yeah. What about that, Don? Is that, I mean, is there just a whole different sense of timing when you start getting into, you know, venues that big and
band style
playing
gigs.
With bands? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't done not too much stuff as big as what Hal's talking about, but, you know, I opened for Andrew Dice Clay for about 10 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we play some decent sized places, 1,800, 2,000. People at a theater, and it's definitely a way different timing, and you can't really do any crowd work, so you're pretty much going on your material, so you have to depend on hopefully that laugh you know, hitting and then, yeah, coming around the room. As far as like any kind of big rock shows,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's definitely a different delivery. It's, you know, you're definitely on hyper speed. I tend to work a little fast as a comic, even in just a regular comedy club.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at a rock show, you're definitely on steroids, man. You can't really give them too much of a pause. You just got to kind of keep on them. And it's funny, like I'm in the middle of this 6-week tour with Anvil. And then when I get back, I'm doing a week at my home club. And I'm gonna literally have to like tell myself,
dial yourself down,
mm-hmm. slow down.
Right.
These are not people. Don, they've had a reasonable amount of drinks.
Yeah, Don, doing that over the years, has that affected your physicality on stage? That's another thought I had. That, you know, if people are coming to a rock show, they're gonna be expecting a lot of movement on stage and stuff like that. Is that something that's maybe kind of evolved in those venues where it's affected you physically in terms of your movements?
A little bit, man. I mean, because, you know, you want to, obviously, if I'm direct support to a band, I have to put on that kind of show with the, mm-hmm. with that kind of energy. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't know. I still think, you know, working from the middle is the most powerful place.
Yeah.
And you can still put out the same amount of energy. The
like
problem
Sade.
Is if you get too physical, people are waiting for Jim Carrey and I'm not him. So,
right. Yeah.
You know, there's a little more maybe strutting back and forth, especially, you know, I was out with Pop Evil. In January and February, and we played some bigger places, the House of Blues and mm-hmm. some nice sized theaters and stuff. So yeah, there might be a little more strutting back and forth, but yeah, I don't want to get too physical either, because then people are waiting for me to, you know, I don't know, stick a firecracker in my ass or
right,
something.
Right. How do you travel? Like, I was thinking about that Anvil gig. I mean, I was thinking, depending on how close he is to this band, I mean, he could either be just, you know, flying city to city and meeting everybody, or you could be taking up the fourth spot in the van or something.
Yeah, the Sid Barrett bunk.
Yeah, like, how close to the road are you when it comes to touring with that band? How do you do it usually?
Yeah, I've only done bus tours up until now. This one's more flyouts and drives,
yeah. mm-hmm.
which I'm really enjoying, because when you're on the tour bus, you really don't see you travel over the country, but you don't see it.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
So I'm flying out, doing a handful of shows, driving from gig to gig, and then I'm coming home to my house in New Jersey.
That's
and
great. Yeah.
Hanging here for, you know, because they're usually not working Monday through Wednesday, and I don't want to be just out in the middle of nowhere doing nothing, so... I've been, but it's been cool driving and seeing, you know, we just did the whole West Coast, you know, I saw you in Vegas.
Yeah.
We started that in San Diego and we went all the way up into Everett and Tacoma, Washington. And that drive up there was really amazing. I've done it before, but, you know, it's always a cool drive. But yeah, you miss that stuff on a bus. But yeah, usually I just say, you know, give me a bunk on the bus and this much money per show and a six pack of Miller Lite. I'm good to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now Don's got his records, the aforementioned Communication Breakdown, also Hellbent for Laughter, which is the ultimate name for a metal comedian's album. Yeah,
right.
The album cover's great too, because it's basically a takeoff on the Hellbent for Leather cover, mm-hmm. but it's got Don's face on it. But those records are on Metal Blade, Don. I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, mm-hmm. you got to be the only comedian that's on Metal Blade Records.
Oh, I was the first one signed there, and then you know, Florentine does his records.
Okay,
his
are on there too. Okay, mm-hmm. yeah. Well, that makes sense.
And Brewer did his last one there. You know, yeah. Brewer does the whole thing with the band and everything.
Yes,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, man. You look, I'm very proud. I mean, that's another great connection for me. You know, as a teenage kid, I used to buy the vinyls of the early Metal Blade compilations, mm-hmm. and that's what turned me on to so much cool music. And then, so when I met Brian Slagle, the head of Metal Blade Records, I was like, oh, my God, this guy's a hero of mine. You know, he's not even a musician, but, you know, he's like shaped, you know, my worldview through music. And he offered me a record deal out one night. And I just thought, like, he was goofing around. I'm like, why would he want a comedian on Metal Blade? And I didn't say anything. I never got back to him. And like a year later, he hired me to do this corporate gig for him. And he picked me up at the airport. And he's like, so you never got back to me about the record deal. I was like, oh, I thought you were just kidding around. Maybe you had too much wine or something. He goes, I want to do a record with you. So I went on the road and opened for one of his bands. And he's like, yeah, let's do this. And within 5 minutes, you know, we did the record deal. And, you know, I'm really proud of, like, where it's all kind of come. Because, again, you know, I came up in the nightclubs and stuff. But, you know, these worlds to me, like I said earlier, man, they always collided. And it was cool be out January at the same time, you know, opening for Pop Evil at the same time Brewer was out opening for Metallica. Yeah. And Larry the Cable Guy was opening for Styx. Now that's a party.
Mm. Boy, that is. Yeah. As far as touring and all that kind of stuff, you know, do you get a chance to? I'm thinking, this is probably also an opportunity to like take some bands in. Like, what are you listening to these days? Because I know you were always, if I recall watching that metal show, I mean, you were probably the heaviest of the three in terms of your tastes and things like that. Like, yeah. What's kind of on the top of your playlist these days?
Yeah, they say you get more mellow when you get older, but I don't know. I'm more into the death metal stuff these days, man. Mm-hmm. I get heavier as I get older. So, you know, Amon Amarth, you know, and God Dethroned and Gate Creeper and Abnormality, man. I'm really into this extreme metal now, man. So, you know, I'm digging that, but yeah, man, I'm 52. So the classic stuff really is the stuff I'll go to 9 times out of 10, but yeah, you know, I try to keep it modern too, man. I mean, I like to check out new bands. The band that's on tour with us now, with the Anvil tour, is called Archer Nation.
Yeah.
They're kind of an old school Megadeth thrash kind of band, man. They're really good.
Mm-hmm.
The Pop Evil tour, we had a band with us called Them Evils, which is an old school 70s vibe. You know, I know that's kind of a popular thing happening now.
Right.
I know Greta Van Fleet is the one everybody knows, but you know, Them Evils is a little bit more influenced by than sort of copy of.
Mm-hmm.
But I dig that, you know, these young bands kind of embrace the old school as well.
Yeah, no, that's an important thing, too, because it's like, you know, we from our youth, you know, we've got enough records on to exist indefinitely. But taking in new bands,
yeah,
you know, and like, and that's always one of the nice things about openers. I find I always make a point to catch openers in a way that maybe I didn't always in my life, because I'm like, well, these guys aren't going to be around forever. You know, right. I gotta see who I'm gonna leave behind.
I'm sure you're a huge Witch Taint fan. I don't know if you're getting into death metal. Have you seen Dave Hill's show, the Black Metal Chronicles?
I've seen some of that stuff. He's so like Dave. Like, yeah. People think I'm weird for going and doing the things that I do. Like, he takes it to a whole other level.
Yeah,
I think what he does is amazing.
I do too. I love Dave. And like, I've seen the Witch Taint. Like, I don't think, Richard, you haven't seen
it.
No, I haven't seen it.
I do love Dave Hill, though. Just quick side note, but when Kim Jong-il died, he put out this series of tweets about his remembrances of his fictitious relationship with Kim Jong-il. That basically, the whole thing was like, they were, no one knew, but they were close friends and maybe lovers.
Yeah,
like,
right.
But just all these fond remembrances he had as he grieved, like, for the loss of Kim Jong-il.
Like that one time we almost got hot dogs in Central Park or whatever, that, you know, moments lost. Like, it was so, like, it was an amazing spoof of the remembrance tweets and social media that everybody gets so exaggerated about.
But I have not seen whatever this
project is. It's kind of glorious, and it gives you a new perspective on the whole black metal world. You know, and obviously black metal is getting a little bit of bad news lately because of the church burning guy down in the in Alabama.
Right.
Which, I mean, granted, it's the Bama, man. I mean, you got to take everything with a grain of salt.
Something was going to get to him.
Yeah, exactly. But there's a personality to that stuff that goes on behind it. It's almost like it's borderline autistic or Asperger's in the people who operate behind the scenes. You know what I mean? Like, this is their one window to the world, you know, and the rest of them, some of them are pretty friggin' normal. Even more so, like a little petty, almost like, look, my cat has a certain dietary needs, you know, like that kind of stuff. Meanwhile, and are you like, I'm not as familiar with you as a player. What kind of music, you know, do you like to play yourself? If and when.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of I wouldn't say failed guitar player, but I gave up on it like early in my life in terms of, you know, not really having the passion to do it.
Right.
Sort of having so much respect for the people who do and do it well.
Right.
Because obviously music's such a huge part of my life. So, you know, and then I was in bands in high school, and then I was just sort of like, I learned early on, it's like, all right, you know, I don't want to lug equipment the rest of my life and have a 0.001% chance of making it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I
want to be a stand-up where I have a 0.12% chance of making it. Right. Yeah.
Fortunately,
yeah.
You went with something more sensible and stable, though.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. You know,
but at least I could just put my dick jokes in my pocket and go to the gig.
That's
I don't
totally
got to
it, dude.
Anybody else.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's not like being a drummer or piano player. Like I need a Bösendorfer or I can't play. That, you know, and that's an interesting thing too. So you got merch, you bring a kit on, you know, on the road with you of stuff that you do. Are you glad handing? Do you do, you know, the meet and greets afterwards? Cause I do a meet and greet after every show. And I, you know, that can burn me down cause I'm talking over just, you know, in between shows, talking over the people resetting the room. In some cases, much less a band playing in the next room, you know. How do you?
I mean, you know, I like to be out and hang with people. You know, I'm always at the merch table afterwards. And on the, you know, again, when I go out with the bands, I want to watch, and I only go out with bands that I like.
Right.
Because what am I doing the rest of the time? I don't want to just go sit in the dressing room or go on the bus and just be by myself. So I love it to be. I love the. The cool thing about going out with a band, especially on a bus, is like I'm still a comic, but I get to the brotherhood of being out with a rock band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get that kind of, oh, yeah, we're going to go to this. We're going to go to town to town and we're going to conquer this town and that town. But I get none of the drama.
Right. Mm. That's
my lead singer isn't, you know, being a dick.
You're right.
The guitar player.
You're not
going to
get fired
yesterday. This one, you know, his girlfriend didn't break up with him. It's just me.
Right. And if you leave by the side of the road, you know, if they dump you on the side of the road like Dave Mustaine at some point, you still can just get a rental car and go home. It's not like, oh, now I've got to negotiate how I own 20% of the name of a band and have to try touring around, you know, going, you know, Dan's Mastodon or whatever, like your own version of it.
Yeah, like I almost kicked myself out of my own comedy career, and I would have to go out as Don Jameson featuring.
That's right.
Yeah,
with Stephen Piercy doing all of your jokes for you, but none of the original jokes.
Well, Don, since one of the beautiful things about podcasting is it is instantly syndicated throughout the world.
Yeah.
What upcoming dates do we need to make everybody aware of? What parts of the country are you going to be
and
in?
Your social media tags well.
Yeah, that's the best place to find me, donjameson.com. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook. Everyone knows how to find that shit. So, you know, if you're into the comedy and rock kind of thing, which I always say, I think those things go hand in hand, like Courtney Love and Crazy.
Mm.
Come check me out with Anvil, or, you know, I'll be out this summer again with another band that I just found out about today, which I wish I could mention, but come out and check that out.
Follow them and find out.
Yeah,
it's a regular stand-up comedy.
Right.
You just come and see me in one of the comedy clubs, or you can come see me and Hal and Richard on our world tour.
Let's do it,
hopefully,
man.
Coming soon.
Let's for sure do that.
Yeah, yeah, we should do a stand-up version of the G3 Guitar Gods thing.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
like
you know what?
I comedy just, version of just like
who's gonna be Yngwie though?
Richard. I'm gonna be the Steve Vai guy because I'm like I sleep with my material, and I meditate before every joke.
Yeah, I'll be the guy where people are like, I'm not even sure this guy speaks English. You know what? I just went to what are they calling it? Because there's G3, but then there's Steve Vai's thing.
Masters of Shred.
No, it's guitar. It had Armageddon in the
guitarded.
Title. No, it's not guitar. Stop saying that.
Guitarmageddon.
Hal has the
my special Charmageddon.
It is Guitarmageddon.
It is Guitarmageddon.
That is what it is.
I'm suing.
I knew it had Armageddon in the title. Hal keeps trying to work guitarded into it, and I'm telling him, Don, I'm like, don't do that. That's going to cost us gigs. Yeah, we're never going to play.
That was going to be my little like mini Instagram series when I would play guitar and like teach licks.
We are not going to get booked to play the Special Olympics after party.
No,
if we call it that. I took my girlfriend to see Guitarmageddon, And she,
oh my God,
I know she's not a player. She's not in the age demo. Like I just thought, okay, at best,
Bassocalypse wasn't rolling through town or whatever.
She's gonna tolerate this. She likes heavy music. So I feel it'd be all right. But it was a stretch. But that thing, man, I don't know if either one of you guys have seen that show, but it was Steve Vai. It was Nuno Betancourt. It was the Nigerian dude whose name I can never pronounce. He plays like the, crap. I'll think of it in a second.
Chapman stick.
You're talking about Tosin.
Tosin. Yes. And then and Zach Wilde. Mm-hmm. So, and Yngwie. So the show was 2 hours of Shred City. And then at the 2 hour mark, that's when they brought out Yngwie.
Oh, my God.
And then it went on for another, 75 minutes. I mean, it was insane.
I'm going to teach a class in this right now.
Watch
me sweet pick.
I was like, note for note, that is the best value we ever got for a concert ticket. Like, that was insane. But they just took your head off with that thing.
The Steve Vai concert in London that you can buy, like his loan concert from a few years ago, one of my favorite concert films of all time. Just the show that fucker puts on and the quality of what he's playing. And then he comes out in his weird, like, giant boots and all lit up and stuff and plays Bad Horsey. It's just awesome.
That is one thing we're going to have to talk about is wardrobe if we're going to do this triple bill together somewhere.
And I think we need to get, was it Michael Winslow? We need to get him to, like, add sound effects to all our sets.
All right. I like it. We're having a production meeting already. Yeah, right. I like this. All
right. I wear the camouflage. I'm just
that's
saying
totally
that
fine. Okay. Yeah, that's fine. And I will wear
that's a deal breaker.
All black platform shoes with lights all over my outfit. I'm for it. Like I as fucked up as this is and as stupid and just pulled out of my ass is, it's not a half bad idea. So that's the danger of this is that us doing the comedy version of,
of a big rock show. Don will be described as the
Guitarded Geddon.
Yeah. Don will be described as the Udo Dirkschneider of the outfit.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I could swing out on a giant steel ball, a way to start the show.
That's right. And then on the last show, that's where we, throw in a Miley Cyrus song and fuck with you as your intro music. Like, you sons of bitches.
I'm just imagining the conversation we have to have with this sound guy about directing us to a load-bearing beam so we can suspend the giant steel ball from it.
Right, yeah.
But how they did that to me in the Pop Evil tour. So every night I had this choreographed thing where I came out to Pantera Walk.
Right.
And I'd throw picks out to the crowd. And then I'd get everybody to sing the first verse into the chorus.
Uh-huh.
And then it cuts out hard.
Yeah.
And then I went into my thing. Yeah. So, of course, the last night I get out there and I'm walking to the mic and I can't hear Walk playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, what the hell is that? And they're playing Careless Whisper.
That's
by Wham. And they bathed me in pink light. Which was beautiful.
Sure. Last
show. Well,
even
there, you got, talking about the band experience, you got the time-honored tradition
of hazing the opener.
Hazing the opener, last show of the tour, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Nice.
Or usually, isn't it the other way around, with the opener hazes the headliner on the last show?
I don't know.
Yeah, but you know what? I was too busy slow dancing after that.
That's a good point.
Yeah, you turned it around on them.
Turn around and just... Sang Father Figure into a microphone louder than the band the whole time. Dude, so fun talking to you.
Yeah,
by the
man,
way.
It's been a pleasure.
This is obviously the beginning of something crazy.
Yeah, appreciate you taking the time.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
All right, well, this has been Don Jameson hanging out on the Double Neck Download, and really excited to get him on. Like I said, I saw him open for Anvil a couple of weeks ago, and he was very gracious with his time tonight. So follow Don on social media. Go out and see him somewhere on the road, and he'll make you laugh. Thanks again for the time, Don.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Peace. Good to meet you telephonically. I will. I look forward to meeting you in person and trading behind-the-scenes stories, stuff we couldn't. The stuff we couldn't talk about on the podcast.
You know, as well, my friend.
That stuff. Yeah.
Thanks to Don Jameson for joining us here on the Double Neck Download.
Yeah, that was a great conversation. It was nice to talk to him for the first time.
Everybody follow us on social media. We mentioned this. We are now six or so episodes into this thing. And what will help us more than anything else is you guys telling a friend.
Yeah.
Tell a friend about this show.
Share
if
the
they
show.
Are a fan of heavy music, then Double Neck Download is for them. Click on the 5 stars on iTunes. That definitely helps us there when you look us up in iTunes. And if you have a moment or two, write a favorable review, maybe a line or two. In fact, while Hal vamps for a second, we have a nice one I wanted
share. Well, I will say, if you're going to – if you do anything, one of the things you can do if you like the show too is if you're involved in any other forums online – you can post a link to it and go, "Hey guys, check this out." That was one of the, that's one of the ways that you can really help us out. And of course, I'm available for personalized videos on cameo.com/Hal Sparks. Is that enough vamping?
I appreciate that. That got me right to where you need to be.
That's what I do.
You got a nice review here from BT Dwayne. Mm-hmm. It says to me, this is Richard Hunter at his best. Hey, that's me.
There you go.
And certainly people have seen me at my worst, so I appreciate that. with well-thought-out arguments that play well with and off of Hal's similar encyclopedic knowledge of hard rock and heavy metal. This is not your stoner podcast that dawdles through 15 hours looking for direction. It is nonstop talk about the bands I grew up with and loved. Congratulations to Richard and Hal.
Oh, that's awesome.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Yeah.
We appreciate that.
Dude,
and that's exactly why we're doing this.
Yep.
It's trying to not only bring on interesting and compelling guests like Dave Ellefson from Megadeth, our last episode. You missed him, Hal, and I should.
I was traveling.
Yeah, I think I explained on the episode. I did a little voiceover, but I explained that that was the only day that David could do it, and he was trying to promote Metal Allegiance. So
and
we
I was
needed
in
to
New
make
Orleans,
it all happen right then.
And I was in New Orleans doing stand up for the Humane Society.
Oh, cool!
Doing a benefit for them, and oddly enough, get on the plane, flying back. I picked up at 4 o'clock in the morning to get to my flight. It's like first flight I could get out of there because I've got so much stuff to do. And on my flight is Robert Hall. And if you don't know who Robert Hall is, Robert Hall was, A, the bass player in 01, my band, the very first bass player we had. He studied bass with Robert Trujillo when he lived in his guest house. Back when Robert was in Suicidal Tendencies and all that. And Robert is a horror director and special effects guy. He did all the special effects on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He did the design on that. He had a company for a long time called Almost Human, and I think Gene Simmons sued him about it, so it's post-human now. But and he was in New Orleans doing a horror movie. He does like burned carcasses and severed arms and all that kind of cool stuff. And I did a movie with him called Lightning Bug and King's X, and gave a song called Screamer for the trailer or for the movie itself. And Josh Todd from Buck Cherry is in the movie. Just a big circle of hard rock friends in that world. And he was just on my flight, was in town for meetings. And he went to his meeting, and he was going to lift back to the airport hotel and hang out or whatever. So he lifted to the studio where King's X is doing their next record, and I picked him up, and I took him over with me when I did the documentary. He's the one who introduced me to Doug on the phone, and then gave him a ride back to his hotel at night, and hung out. And he's one of my best friends, and I don't get to see him because he travels. He's doing a movie. His next movie is called Jiu-Jitsu. And it's a sci-fi movie starring Nicolas Cage. And the premise is jiu-jitsu is actually a martial art that came from an alien race. That's why all these different countries claim the style all over the world. And it's because it actually came from an alien that came down and challenged the humans.
Yeah.
And so it's like this blood sport sci-fi movie where this alien has come back to kind of claim the title, essentially.
Yeah.
And Nicolas Cage is in it, so it's going to be a perfect film.
I can tell you in the jiu-jitsu community, there are always disputes over the true origin.
Sure.
So we'll throw another one in there. Right now not an extraterrestrial theory, so
this is it. This will solve it once and for all. So Robert's going back. He's going to... Greece and Germany and all these places to go shoot this movie. He left today.
Oh, wow.
Just happened to be flying in on my flight. Just happened to be. And he and I came up with a TV show that we're going to pitch just hanging out. So it was one of those moments where you're like, this weird little needle was supposed to be thread by the universe.
Yeah.
But super excited about possibly doing shows, with all three of us together. And again, give us a five stars if you love us. Write us a little review, mm-hmm. even if it's just I listen every week.
We'll read it on the air.
Yeah, we will read it on the air, and we really appreciate you guys, listening to us, and having the same passion for hard and heavy music that we like so much, and caring about these musicians, because I want to, above and beyond all this, like I'm one of these people who believes you can never pay for music what it deserves, as far as cost. Like, there's no way. Take your favorite song and tell me it's worth 99 cents or $1.29.
Yeah.
Embarrass yourself. Tell me your favorite song is worth even the six times you bought it on vinyl and then cassette and then CD and then on iTunes and then on Amazon, streaming or, or you downloaded it from Spotify because you needed to have it on available all the time. Tell me that song is worth the $5.99 you paid for the record, the $11.99 you paid for the cassette, the $16.99 when it went to CD in the big tall box. The value is immeasurable. And the people that brought us this music, a lot of them are still touring around, still throwing it against the wall as best they can, ice skating uphill in in this area where, some of them were in a forgotten genre for a long time, now getting a resurgence, now getting a little bit of the respect back that they were denied for a while. And Richard and I are here not just to share our love of this music, but also our respect for and support of these musicians as they go about doing this,
Yep, and we appreciate you guys contributing to the program, following us on social media, Double Neck Download on Instagram. We have a Double Neck Download Facebook page and Double Neck Down on Twitter. In fact, when I say contributing to the program, Hal, a conversation that came up a couple of weeks ago, we were discussing the band Poco.
Mm-hmm.
And one of your longtime fans, Ginger, on our Twitter said she listened to the episode and she said, actually, out of Poco came two members of the Eagles, Randy Meisner and Timothy B. Schmidt.
That's right.
She said her favorite is Rose of Cimarron, I guess one of their songs, and Call It Love from 1989.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, so there you go. See, you guys teach us stuff sometimes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So that's it. We appreciate Don Jameson for coming on. If you missed Dave Ellefson of Megadeth, check out our last episode. In fact, Hal and I are having our first Double Neck Download field trip this week. We're going to go out and see David Ellefson with Metal Allegiance.
Yeah, so, I'm excited about
next
that.
Episode, we'll
talk
give you
about
a report
that.
About that.
Maybe
yeah,
we'll
for
bring
sure.
the Zoom with us and see if we can get a little audio from some of these guys.
Totally, we should do that. All right, so all the more reason to tune into the next episode of the Double Neck Download. For Hal Sparks, I'm Richard Hunter, and we'll see you next week.
Rock on.